Hello, and welcome to the podcast Unlocking Language, where we explore the art and science behind learning languages and discover the interesting world of second language acquisition. I'm your host, Marielle Fernbeck. In our inaugural episode, we're going to take a deep dive into second language acquisition and really reflect back on why it's so important to us as language educators. This whole episode will be framed around three big questions that have guided my reflective journey learning over the past few months. But before we get into that, let me introduce myself. My name is Marielle, and I have been teaching English as a second language for around 5 years now, which is crazy to think about. It feels like I just started. I teach adult learners English in link classes, and link classes are language instruction for newcomers to Canada. And I teach in two different programs at two different schools, and I have taught every level of link classes from very, very beginner literacy learners all the way up to CLB level 7-8, which is way more advanced. I've also taught classes in EAP programs to adults that want a more academic English experience from school. And quite honestly, it has been a journey. And these last few years, I'm just constantly learning more and more new things about myself, the students, and just teaching as a whole, every single class. And that's something I always try to tell my students, right? This whole journey, this whole experience is all about learning and discovering. And just because I'm a teacher doesn't mean I know everything, right? So I really try to hammer that one home. You know, it's all about the learning. Well, as I mentioned before, this podcast is going to be centered around three big questions. And those questions are, how do you understand second or additional language acquisition, or SLA? What are your key takeaways regarding factors that influence SLA in different contexts? And what does any of this mean for your praxis or your practice as a language teacher? Now, as I said, it has definitely been a learning journey throughout these last few months, and I've been lucky enough to think about these questions for some time. And the really cool part is that I get to try little things out in my classroom as I go, since I'm teaching and studying at the same time, which is kind of a nice perk because I get to read about it and put it into practice right away, which is super, super cool and really helps me as a student learn more about my students and these theories in general. So let's get started. Let's start with that first question. How do you understand second or additional language acquisition? And to be quite honest, before I started my learning journey into SLA, I didn't really think about how complex and how dynamic it really was. Second language acquisition is not just cognitive. It is so, so different for every single person, and every single person acquires language differently depending on so many different factors. These factors can be things like motivation, communication, meaning. All of these have deep roots in successful acquisition of language. Now, throughout my studies, I focused quite a bit on researchers like Dr. Stephen Krashen and the Comprehensible Input, or CI, hypothesis. This is one that Krashen created, and this actually caused tons of controversy in the education community, which is kind of why I liked it. Right, comprehensible input theory is one of the, you know, some people would argue that it's one of the foundational theories of second language acquisition. And it's all part of a broader framework known as the Monitor Model, where Krashen explores many ways people acquire a second language. Now, this framework is important because it emphasizes natural language acquisition over things like accuracy, memorization, drills, explicit grammar instruction, and more. And CI is much more motivating for learners because it's engaging and intriguing. And this really, really interested me because many students in my own classes are learning English because they have to. They're adults, right? They need it to work in Canada, to function in society. And one of the big ones is to get Canadian citizenship, right? They need a CLB. CLB stands for Canadian Language Benchmarks. They need CLB level 4 in listening and speaking in order to even apply for citizenship. So they really need to be in these classes to support themselves and or their families, right? Now, the goal of my class is to get them these things that they need. They need the language, right, to do these things, but to also instill a love for languages. I want my students to come to my class not just because they need to, but because they want to, and that is that key difference, right? So therefore, using CI is a great way to acquire natural language through vast amounts of understandable input. And I really like to think about how we learned language as babies. It's kind of interesting when you think about it, right? It's all through listening. There is no grammar at all. Adults just talk to us in slow and understandable ways, which helped us learn. It's pretty cool. I had honestly never thought about that before, and I'm starting to think about it more and more with second language acquisition. I also kind of developed an understanding of why and how second language acquisition should be authentic and meaningful. All of the students in my class have different levels of language ability, and I need to always be mindful of all the different cultures, different people, different backgrounds within my classroom as a whole. There are people from all over the world within my link classes right now, and their English abilities are all over the place. Now, motivation is the key to unlock in second language acquisition, and I believe everything comes back to that motivation. Now, Dr. Liam Printer, a really, really cool researcher that I have been listening to, he explains that intrinsic motivation is needed in the language classroom because it helps increase the number of students that are loving our lessons, which is kind of what I want, right? The students need these classes, but I want them to love these classes. We need to plan our lessons for things like autonomy, competence, and relatedness if we really want to drive that intrinsic motivation, right? That joy, that want, that desire to learn the language. And I never realized how much providing choice and minimizing pressure created such a successful learning environment. And this made me understand, actually, this is really cool, that there is a key aspect of this in my link classes that I teach that I didn't even realize. Every month, my learners do something called a needs assessment, which is where they choose the topic that they would like to learn about next. And I always make sure to include another category too so that everybody can voice what they want. So I put a section titled as other in their form that they fill out, just because I want everybody, you know, if there's something on the list that they don't want, then they can still voice their opinion. They can still have a little bit of choice. And I always create my lesson plans for the month based on their thoughts and ideas. And generally the feedback is very positive because almost everyone is learning about things they picked, right? So second language acquisition is very, very important and more complex than I had originally thought. Learners need to feel seen and supported and comfortable within the classroom environment. And this can be done through compelling and comprehensible inputs that help stem that motivation and connection as a learner. So a lot of thought put into this. This is really, really cool to learn. There's so much more beneath second language acquisition than you really think. And it's really neat to explore those concepts and hypotheses in more in depth. Now, let's move on to the next question from my list. This question really stood out to me. It was, what are your key takeaways regarding factors that influence SLA in different contexts? And honestly, over time, I have thought and put into practice many different takeaways regarding factors that influence SLA in different contexts. And interestingly enough, most of the research I've studied focuses on younger learners, mostly in elementary or high school classrooms. And that's a little foreign to me because I teach adult learners in a classroom where only the target language of English is spoken. So one of the most interesting hypotheses for me was the critical period hypothesis. Is there a critical age period for language learning after which time becomes impossible to do so? And this really intrigued me, since all of my students are adults, already way past the point of puberty. I'm talking, you know, the youngest student I've ever had was 18. The oldest student I've ever had in my class was 82. So we're talking a big range. And I'm wondering, you know, is it harder to gain the language after you're past this critical period? Now, interestingly enough, many of my students come into the classroom with expectations of sounding like a native speaker, I'm saying that in quotations, after a certain amount of time in an English class. And a lot of them actually request to have me as a teacher because they want a so-called, air quotations again, a native Canadian to teach them English. But the reality is that none of them will ever have a perfect native English speaker sounding voice. Whatever perfect native English really is, right? We don't know. What is perfect native English speaking? That's a whole other can of worms that we can talk about on another podcast, but you know, I don't think having a native English speaker as their teacher makes the class better or worse. And one of my favorite podcasters, Dr. Liam Printer, argues not to get bogged down by accent and pronunciation. He says accents are just a marker that you're a multilingual person, not that something is wrong with your language. And interestingly enough, this is a concept that almost none of my students understand, which is really interesting to think about. Now, many studies say that the later you start the language, the harder it is to get that to those advanced levels. And that made me think, right? I've taught all levels of linked classes from the very beginning to the very, very advanced. And when I taught those advanced linked classes, I noticed that almost all of my students had studied English in their home countries or knew multiple languages, had high levels of education from back home. A lot of them had university, college, master's degrees, and so on. And when I compared that with my beginner level linked classes, many of my students had not received any or very little education from back home. And lots were illiterate in their native language. They couldn't read or write their native language. And I found that these students may need more inputs as well as more motivation to help them pick up the language. And something else that was a key takeaway for me was the idea that native language, your native language, may help or hinder your second language acquisition. And this really made me think back to my linguistics classes in university. So interesting how every language has different sounds and noises that we develop and create with our mouths and tongue. And some languages have the same sounds, and some languages have sounds that other languages don't have. You can scaffold with your native language if the sounds are similar, but if not, it may actually interfere with your second language acquisition and retention. How cool. And I think back to my own classes and I think about students that share the same L1 and I think, oh my goodness, all of them have trouble pronouncing this, or all of them say this word incorrectly or whatever. And it's so interesting to think about. And I actually, a while back, had a class and I got the students to teach me pieces of their language. I wanted them to have the opportunity to try and share their language with me, which is what I do every class, right? I'm sharing English with them every class. And some of the things I couldn't pronounce. And we all had a great laugh. But I think, honestly, this is just me thinking out loud here. It really made them feel more comfortable. And it's so interesting to think about because they could relate to me that I didn't learn these sounds. I didn't have these sounds. And it's okay if they don't have some sounds that I have. Really, really, really interesting. Now, I have a lot of takeaways to talk about here, but another one that I've really taken away from these last few months was the aspect of communication and how important it is. And I really want to drive home the idea that mistakes in a language classroom are okay. English is my first language, and I still make mistakes all the time. And the students will sometimes point that out, and I celebrate it. Like, awesome, you found that mistake. That's amazing. Let's talk about it, about me, right? Which is great. I want them to feel comfortable. I want them to know I'm not perfect. This is my first language, and I make mistakes. I even joke with them. There's some words in English I can't even pronounce. And that's okay. And at the beginning of this school year, I actually had students in my class try and read sentences, and every other word they said was sorry because they were slow and having a hard time with pronunciation. And I really tried to steer them away from the idea that mistakes are bad. But there's no easy way around error correction, right? How much should we correct and when? And it's kind of hard when students are constantly asking you, is this correct? Am I right, teacher? Is this good, right? And Dr. Liam Printer mentions a great point in one of his podcasts. He outlines the idea that as a teacher, you should only focus on 2 to 3 major errors because the whole idea is not about accuracy, it's about communication. And this can overly help with motivation within the classroom as well. I actually took a university French class back when I did my undergraduate degree, and I got picked apart for every small error in my speech. And this made me feel very demotivated. And look at me now. I quit French. I'm going to say it. I quit. Correcting constantly is not helping the learners move forward because you're getting them to focus too much on the exact right expression and the exact right thing to say rather than allowing them to have that communication. And quite honestly, I think this is what led me to feeling so anxious and nervous when I was learning French. It is so hard to move through all the errors. Yes, grammar and accuracy can come at a higher level, but that most important thing is communication, especially in those beginner classes. And talking about being nervous and feeling nervous to speak, talking in class can really make students feel nervous. And when I was in grade school, way back, I took core French from grades 4 to 12, and then all through my undergraduate degree. And most of these classes, no matter what grade, focused on form and accuracy with a ton of grammatical instruction. I'm talking about all things grammar. When I say I've learned all my grammar in French, and now when I teach it in English, I think, wow, I learned this in French before I learned it in English. And look at me now, I'm teaching it in English. It's kind of interesting, but I think a lot of Canadian kids have the same experience. It was so rare that we did any type of speaking practice or activities like that. And if there were any kind of speaking components, I would panic and get extremely anxious. And honestly, I think this was because I wasn't ready to speak yet, but I was forced to. And that's why it's so important to think as the teacher. The less I force the students to speak, the more they will understand the language and speak when they're ready and feel more confident. Reading that now really validates how I felt. I needed this. Like, this really, really validated all those years ago when I felt so anxious. I thought something was wrong with me. But in reality, I feel like I just wasn't ready to speak. And in university, I actually did my undergraduate degree in French literature and linguistics, and I did not come into the program bilingual. I did core French through elementary school, as I said, in high school, but again, my speaking was never that great. I did well in reading and writing. However, I look back now and I think I probably wasn't provided with enough comprehensible inputs to really ever feel comfortable speaking, which is really sad to think about. And I had a professor in university that I will never forget. This was my 4th year, so I was almost done university. And I took a class called French Intensive Grammar. And yes, that was the actual name. And it's hilarious because this is totally Dr. Liam Printer's nightmare class. The whole construct of the class was form accuracy with a focus on 0 mistakes with explicit grammar. And it was like the professor knew I was struggling. He would constantly cold call me. He would stand over me while I worked, and it just made me feel extremely uncomfortable. And I would sometimes have to leave his classroom and sit in the hallway due to the extreme panic and stress that I would feel. This class caused me so much grief. I had panic attacks about it. It was just horrific. It was horrific. And attendance was mandatory. I needed this course to graduate from my program. So I failed the first midterm. Surprise. I wasn't enjoying it. I didn't understand. So I booked a meeting with the professor in his office because I wanted help and I wanted to understand where I went wrong. And when I got to his office, he took out my exam, set it down in front of me, and said the first English words I'd ever heard him say. He said, "Out of all 2,000 students I've ever had, you're the worst." I can still remember how small I felt in that little office with him staring down at me. And I remember telling him that I couldn't do this, and I ran from his office crying. And, I worked hard, and I said, I'm not going to fail this class, can't take it again. And I ended up finishing with a 50 and a hatred for a language that I had once loved. So, really unfortunate. I still haven't fixed my relationship with French. And this really drove home the idea that allowing students to speak when they're ready and providing them with a motivating and safe environment is so important to keep them in the language classroom. And comprehensible input makes it so much easier for teachers and students and increases the likelihood for them to get better. So, lots of food for thought here. Really made me think about my own experiences. And that takes us to the last question for this podcast. What does any of this mean for your praxis or practice as a language teacher? And this is a really great question. And quite honestly, it means a lot for me as a language teacher and in general, just as a person and how I think about language learning. First and foremost, I think I need to provide lots of compelling inputs within my classroom for motivation to stem and thrive. All of my students are adults, and they all have different educational, cultural, language backgrounds, so it's important to try and find ways to help motivate all of them, which is sometimes an impossible feat, but, you know, I can try. you'll never motivate everybody, but you can try. And quite honestly, I've been working away from an accuracy-based approach within my classroom, and I've been seeing positive results. Mind you, I do have some students that very much enjoy grammar lessons and are all about the form over meaning, and I thought about it, and I think this stems from the educational backgrounds that they were brought up with, since most of these students come from countries where hierarchical and strict education was practiced. So places like China, Russia, Ukraine, places like that. And this makes me think that Michael Long's focus on form approach from 1991 might be a good idea to help cater to some of those that enjoy grammar and accuracy. Right? You can draw students' attention to linguistic elements that arise in a lesson, but the overall focus is still on meaning. Maybe someone asks about a certain sentence structure you used, and you can do a mini pop-up grammar lesson for a few minutes and then go back to your lesson. I think this is a great way to make sure I cater to all of my students while keeping the focus on comprehensible inputs. I'm actually teaching a beginner class and an advanced class in the fall, so two different classes, and I can't wait to put everything I learned about comprehensible input into practice. For the beginner class, I could use things like movie talk, picture talk, and really focus on those comprehensible messages of reading and listening that doesn't focus much on the mechanics of the language. We don't want to do that in a beginner class. And I actually tried using picture talk in my intermediate link class of students last month. I really wanted to see how the theory would work with my adult learners. And my students were learning about language for opinions, right? Like things like, I agree, I disagree, stuff like that. So I put up some pictures of different things that people may like or dislike. For example, a picture of a thunderstorm with people running around in umbrellas wearing rubber boots. And I provided lots of compelling inputs. You know, we talk about the weather every day. They have this kind of language. We do a lot of discussion about weather. They were learning about small talk, so we did a lot of weather discussion. And I got the students to make up a funny story about what they were seeing in the picture. They described everything to me. I asked them questions like, what is the weather like in your home country? Do your kids play in the rain? And so on, while creating the story and getting them to use that opinion language without me explicitly teaching it to them. And I thought it was so cool to see them interact with the picture and use that language naturally, because they could all relate to it. And it gets me wondering, like, I wish I could experiment with this, but I wonder if I had done a straight grammar lesson, like an explicit grammar lesson about opinion language and structures, maybe they would have been bored. However, using picture talk, they were fully understanding the materials and following along with the narrative and compelling inputs. That raised their confidence and motivation, which is a win-win. At that beginner level, we really need to provide detailed and directional support, things like integrated formats or dual modalities, and this can be done by providing pictures, gestures, mimes, TPR, you know, and more. And if you take away any confidence, you'll lose them completely, and that's not what we want as language teachers, right? Achievement breeds motivation, and there is a circular impact. Now, thinking about my advanced class, I thought about switching to thinking about using loads of input still and then include some pointing out and noticing certain things. And something that I thought about was the 2014 Nick Ellis and Stephanie Wolf usage-based model of acquisition, because it helped me understand the idea that input is key, but noticing is important for advanced learners, noticing things within the work that they do. I'm starting to get more and more comfortable with CI within my own classroom, and it's hard because I was taught in such a way that focused so heavily on being accurate with what you say and write as a teacher. And now I'm a huge believer of the process, but it did take some time, especially with some students that had never experienced learning in this way before. Sometimes as a native English speaker, it does take a lot more effort for me to keep everything comprehensible for my students. And that is something I've been working on and learning through my 5 years of teaching, all those different levels and kind of understanding what's best for each level. And this kind of brings me to a close. Finally, I've decided that I really want to try learning another language again. And I think I'm going to try and fix my relationship with French after I lost it so long ago. It's important for teachers to be language acquirers themselves, so that we can understand and know what our students are feeling. We have to build that system first with compelling and rich inputs to start that language acquisition journey. And my link classes are very much low stakes, so it's important for me to remember the motivation, engagement, acquisition cycle. Acquiring language increases competence, and achievement drives motivation, and achievement results in motivation, right? It's all a big wheel of learning. And I always plan my lessons with motivation in mind. Now, it's better for me and the students in my class, and will help them acquire more and more language over time. Alrighty, that seems like a good point to wrap up the first ever episode of Unlocking Language, the new second language acquisition podcast hosted by yours truly. I've had so much fun doing this, and I have so much more to talk about, but that will have to wait for episode number 2. Thank you for joining me throughout my reflective journey all about second language acquisition, and I hope this episode can inspire you to start thinking deeper about SLA in your own classroom and all the ways you can provide compelling, comprehensible inputs to your own students. Keep thinking, keep questioning, keep trying new things, and stay positive. Until next time, this was Unlocking Language, the Second Language Acquisition Podcast.